soon. Maybe scrape together some money and buy the book I've been reading. Something, anything to make me feel normal again. I was walking along the sidewalk, taking in the neon lights of business signs and the stars above that, when my phone rang. It was Jane.
Oh my God, Janie! I squealed. You're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine, she said. I finally got a new cell phone yesterday. My old one got lost in the tornado. I've been dying to talk to everyone.
Danny said you were in Kansas City.
Yeah, staying with my uncle. Our house got wiped out. Afterward, we were climbing around trying to find stuff, and this big bunch of bricks fell on me and broke my leg in 3 places. I'm on stupid crutches for the whole summer. Can you believe that? At this point, I could believe almost anything. People think a tornado drops down on a cow pasture or a trailer park and everything is fine. They never think about things like infected cuts and broken legs and old ladies crushed by air conditioners in their bathtubs. They never think about orphans.
Were you in the school when it happened?
She chuckled. Yeah, we didn't even know anything was going on. We were practicing and never heard the sirens. We didn't figure it out until the power went off, and then we heard all kinds of horrible noise, crashing and banging, like everything was falling down around us. But everyone was fine. Nobody got hurt or anything. And thank God my parents had gone to my brother's soccer game over in Milton, so nobody was home. Our house is completely gone.
Mine too. I have, like, nothing left.
I have my violin, and that's pretty much it, she said. But the funny thing is, I don't want to play it. At all. The only thing I've got left, and it's still in my dad's trunk.
It'll come back.
I guess, maybe. It just seems kind of pointless now, is all.
So many things do, I wanted to say.
So, are you going back to Elizabeth? I asked instead.
Yeah, my dad's been down there all week, clearing off our lot.
I guess right now everyone's just trying to get the debris moved out of the way. There was a minivan on top of my bed. She laughed, then sobered.
Oh, hey, I'm really sorry about your mom and sister.
Thanks. It's been pretty hard.
Yeah.
She took a breath. Danny told me you're staying with your dad in Castor City. I didn't even know you had a dad. You never talked about one.
I didn't have one. He's just a jerk who shares my DNA, and he would argue that we don't even share that much.
I'm trying to get Danny to let me stay with her and Elizabeth. I can't live here.
When everyone gets settled, you should come up to KC for a visit, Jane said, and at last my heart lightened. My friends were coming through.
My cousin Lindy is a trip. You'd like her. I'll ask my aunt.
Yeah, I said. I'll call when I get out of here, and then I'll come by.
We talked for a few more minutes about things like where our friends had ended up, what would happen with graduation, given that we didn't have a school and nobody really knew how many seniors were still in Elizabeth, and whether or not the movie theater was standing. It seemed like so long since I'd talked about anything other than the tornado. I hardly knew how to talk about other things. The conversation ended too quickly as we both seemed to run out of things to say.
When had that happened?
When did I stop knowing how to talk to Jane? I hung up the phone and continued walking, but only got a few steps, when a blast of a horn a few feet away made me jump.
Where the hell you been? Clay yelled, hanging out the car window. Get in the damn car!
At first, I stood rooted in my spot. I had that stranger danger feeling that we were always warned about when we were kids. Don't ever get into a car with a stranger, we'd been told. Trust your instincts. If your instincts tell you the situation is bad, stay away from it. Never get in the car with a dangerous person. Never let him take you to another location. But nobody ever told you what to do if you got those gut feelings about the man who was supposedly your father.
What are you staring at? Get in the car, I said.
Swallowing nervously, I pulled open the passenger door and slid into the front seat. The ripped vinyl making dull tearing noises on the backs of Terry's jeans. He had the car in drive and was squealing away from the curb before I even got the door all the way closed.
Been looking everywhere for you. My sister must have lost her damn mind, he muttered,
looking more at my hair than at the road in front of him.
His tires bumped a curb and he quickly corrected, then overcorrected, the car swerving into the other lane and back again.
Letting you color your hair, paying for it with money she ain't even got. The two of you look ridiculous. And now, my girls are feeling left out, and Tonette ain't gonna have them going around looking like that, that's for sure. You keep telling me I'm your dad, but you don't even ask before you go and color your hair something stupid.
I gritted my teeth, willing my mouth not to open, willing my ears not to hear him.
You're just gonna sit there like a loaf of bread, he pressed.
But I continued to stare straight ahead, ramrod stiff on the torn passenger seat, watching him sway and swerve and knock into things like a pinball, clenching my teeth and my fists and my heart, feeling my resolve to stay silent crumble. If I didn't speak up for me, who would?
If you're gonna leave the house, you need to tell someone you're going, he ranted.
Why? I said, turning on him. He pulled up to a stop sign, glanced at me.
What do you mean, why?
I mean, why do I need to tell someone? He looked at me, incredulous.
So people don't go worrying, that's why.
I coughed out a laugh. Who is worried? Tonette? Billy? Harold, who never even speaks to me? You? Give me a break. Nobody here cares about me.
That don't give you the right to disobey the rules.
I hadn't wanted to get into it with my father, but I'd opened my mouth, and now there would be no shutting it again. Lexi and Meg told me you didn't want me here. Why did you agree to let Ronnie send me? He turned hard into a parking lot and screeched into a space. For a second, I got scared that he was going to do something dangerous.
I ask myself that every day, he said.
His nostrils flared.
Maybe 'cause Tonette's right and I'm some sort of sap. Guess I figured after all these years of your mom keeping you from me, I deserved something out of you.
We were staring at each other now, each of us with hate in our eyes. What are you talking about? I said. She never kept me from you. You walked out on us. You never came back. A slow grin spread across his face, and he began nodding as if it all made sense to him now.
Is that what she told you? That I walked out?
He tipped his head back against the seat and laughed, then turned to me again.
I got tossed out. Christine wanted something better.
He made air quotes with his fingers when he said the last three words, then jammed a stubby thumb at his chest.
I told her I could be something better, I'd get a job and stop drinking and would take care of you. But she said she deserved more and I'd see you again over her dead body and that was that. And look, she's dead. And now here you are.
You lie, I said through my teeth, but a part of me could tell that he wasn't lying. A part of me could see it in the slight tremor of his thumb, could see it etched into the lines around his eyes. You never wanted anything to do with me. His eyes hardened and he paused, sizing me up, the muscles of his jaw working.
Damn shame that's the story she gave you, 'cause it ain't the truth.
It's not a story. It is the truth, I said. But my voice was wavering, getting softer. He put the car into reverse and began backing out of the parking spot.
When I threatened to get the law involved, she started saying you weren't even mine.
He put the car into drive and glanced at me one more time.
I believed her at the time. She was some kind of messed up, and I wouldn't have put nothing past her at that point. But anyone with eyes can see we got the same DNA.
He pulled out onto the road and started heading toward the house again.
And then she was gone, moved. Wasn't the first time she'd disappeared on someone. I gave up, met Tonette, started over. Forgot I even had a daughter named Jersey. Didn't seem like there was anything else I could do.
We drove along for a few minutes in silence, the town giving way to squat, cookie-cutter homes. I wanted to get back to the house, to retreat to my couch and pull the blanket over my head, try to disappear from the lies, try to ignore the sinking suspicion that the liar was Mom, not Clay. Just thinking it made me feel like a traitor. If what he said was true, the story of my life was a lie. I'd spent so many hours wondering about him, imagining him, wishing he'd come to my birthday party or to Christmas mornings, or would stop by or call to see how I was doing. He never did, and I'd spent so much time hating him for abandoning me. But according to him, he hadn't. She'd kept him away. She let me think it was about me. She let me pine for him. She told me he was a monster, worthless, dangerous. She made me afraid of him. She encouraged me to hate him. I refused to believe it. I couldn't.
So why then? I croaked. If what you say is true, if you tried so hard to stay connected with me, why don't you want me here now?
Because I don't need no paternity test to tell me whether or not you belong to me. At this point, I already know you don't. You were Christine's from day one. You ain't my kid. You're a stranger, and you're messing with my real family.
I never had a chance to be your real family, I said. He shrugged.
That ain't my fault.
He pulled into the driveway roughly, and I leapt out. I swung the door shut and tromped around the back of the house while he laid on the horn. I heard the front door open and Tonette's nasal voice squawking.
I'm coming, I'm coming. Jesus, keep your wad in your pants, Clayton.
I was so busy thinking about my mom as I flung open the door to my porch. I didn't even notice Lexi and Meg until I was practically on top of them. Chapter 19. My half-sisters were sitting on my couch, laughing.
You look like an old lady,
I heard one of them say, but my mind was unable to make sense out of what exactly I was seeing. They had Marin's purse. It was open on Lexi's lap, the contents bare to the world. Marin's things. My things. What? I started, but then I noticed that both of them were chewing gum, the foils wadded up and tossed onto the couch, and they both had pink lipstick-smeared mouths. Lexi was clutching Mom's lipstick in her hand, rolled all the way to the top, the pretty slanted point ruined. Across the front of the purse, they had written "cow" in Mom's lipstick.
You got some seriously messed up taste in lipstick, Granny, Lexi said,
but she looked nervous as she said it, as if she knew they had crossed the line this time. I reached out and snatched the lipstick out of her hand. That was my mother's, I said, feeling a rage swelling so big inside me I wasn't sure how to contain it. I'd unclenched my teeth and everything I'd been feeling in that car ride home, hell, everything I'd been feeling since the tornado, strained to get out of me. I felt bare and taut, an exposed nerve, a caged animal, a spring. I'd lost everything at this point. I had nothing left but my memories, the ones that came from me, the ones I could trust. And they were trying to steal those, too. They couldn't. I wouldn't let them. If I let go of my memories, I might never recognize me again.
Well, your mom has gross taste, then, Meg said.
I reached down and picked up the purse, grabbed the foils they'd discarded on the couch, dropped everything inside, then hurriedly zipped the purse shut and hugged it to my shoulder, the lipstick they'd drawn on the outside smearing up against my skin.
Hey!
Meg said, standing up, her nose a couple inches away from my chin. Lexi followed half a beat later, but took a small step to the side, hanging back a little. Meg grabbed for the purse, but I clamped my elbow down on it.
Nobody said you could have that back.
It's not yours to take, I said.
Anything in my house is mine to take, she said. And if I want to take your ugly-ass lipstick and your little gum stash, I will. And that goes for anything else you might have, Jersey cow. Because you don't get to say what goes on in this house. You don't belong here, and everyone knows it. Meg, Lexi said.
I glanced over. Lexi was looking worriedly between her sister and me.
Come on, let's go to Jeff's party now.
What?
Meg said defensively.
It's the truth. The only reason she's here is nobody wants her.
She had turned toward her sister,
but my eyes were firmly planted on Meg, on her delicate little ear with the earring snaking up the side, on her sharp, freckled cheekbone, on the corner of her hateful little mouth where lipstick collected in a pink pool. My mother's face swam before my eyes, coming out of the bedroom, the pink lipstick making her skin look creamy and smooth. Marin's voice echoed in my ears.
It's for special. I like it sharp.
And now the tip was blunt and ragged, ugly. It had been stretched across the lips of two horrid girls who had only worn it to be cruel, had been dragged across the face of Marin's purse, no longer special, no longer new. That lipstick had probably been Marin's most prized possession, and these two bitches had no right. Before I knew what was happening, my hand reached out and grabbed Meg's face, slapping up against her mouth as I dug my fingers in and clawed, trying to wipe the lipstick from her lips. She didn't deserve it. She wasn't special enough. These were my memories, mine, and I would die before I would let anyone take them from me. Meg gave a surprised little yelp, stumbling backward. Her heels caught the edge of the couch, and she sprawled back onto the floor, her head knocking against the boards loudly. I followed her down, clawing and scratching at her face, mashing her lips against her teeth with my palms, dragging my hands across her mouth over and over again. I was so intent on getting my sister's lipstick back, I was only vaguely aware of the racket we were making. I was grunting, crying, repeating that she didn't deserve to use my sister's lipstick, that she wasn't special enough to give it back. Meg was screaming as much as she could through my fingers, her eyes wide and frightened, her hands flailing at my hair, my face, my chest. And in the background, I heard Lexi's voice as she cried for help. There was blood. I could see there was blood. Meg's pink mouth had been replaced by a much larger red one. I didn't care. I didn't care about anything anymore. What did it matter? What did anything matter now? I was alone. I had no home, no family, nowhere that I belonged. In that moment, I finally and truly understood what it meant to have nothing to lose. I kept after her until I was yanked to my feet roughly by two hands under my armpits. As soon as I was pulled off her, Meg curled up on one side, her arms flung over her mouth, her cries more like muffled shrieks. I turned wildly, half ready to fight whoever had pulled me from her, but was surprised to see that it was Grandfather Harold. His fingers dug into my shoulders, his face a deep wrinkled scowl. Lexi gaped at me over his shoulder, trembling, tears running down her cheeks. "Let me go!" I shrieked, twisting violently out of his grasp.
"What the hell is going on?"
Grandmother Billy said, bursting through the screen door, her nightgown swishing and swinging above her hairy ankles. She looked from Meg to Lexi, to my grandfather, to me, her head whipping around almost comically.
"She attacked Meg," Lexi said. "She scratched her up bad."
I turned my hands over and gazed at the blood on my fingers. I was still out of breath, so angry I could hear my pulse in my ears, but in a way, what had just happened seemed impossible, like it had happened to someone else. Had my hands not been all bloody, I might have even tried to deny it. Grandmother Billy hurried over to Meg and knelt next to her, trying to pry her arms away from her mouth so she could see the damage.
"They,"
I said, then paused. How could I continue? They stole my sister's lipstick. They stole my memories. Grandfather Harold took a heavy step toward me.
"These girls ain't ever been in a lick of trouble until you got here. Now I understand why Ronnie wanted to be rid of you."
"I've never been in trouble either," I cried out. "You don't have any idea what I'm like."
"I shouldn't have agreed to this, family or not,"
Grandmother Billy said. By this time, Terry had joined the crowd, staring out through the screen door, Jimmy perched on one hip, rubbing his eyes. She pushed Jimmy's head against her shoulder with one palm and shushed him, but didn't say anything. I gazed at her, feeling ashamed. Grandfather Harold motioned to Lexi.
"Help your grandmother clean up your sister. We'll deal with you tomorrow,"
he said to me.
"I suppose we should call Tonette and get her home."
They all shuffled back into the house, Meg's cries turning to wet snuffles, Lexi glaring at me over her shoulder through slitted eyes. Aunt Terry watched me for a second longer,
Then I heard the sound of the screen door lock clicking into place. At first, I stayed rooted to my spot near the couch. The covered barbecue grill behind me, a stack of broken plastic lawn chairs close by. I blinked in the darkness, wondering how I had gotten here. How I'd gone from reading in a cozy armchair in a real bookstore to scrabbling open the skin of my half-sister's mouth in the space of half an hour. Or how I'd gone from cooking dinner for my family to sleeping alone on a porch in little more than a month. It all seemed so surreal. My life no longer felt like mine.
"We'll deal with you tomorrow," Grandfather Harold had said, and though I didn't know exactly what he'd meant by that, I knew it wasn't going to be good.
Worse, he'd planned to call Tonette, interrupt her night of bar hopping to let her know that I'd beat up her precious little girl. I would be in huge trouble, because as angry as my grandparents had been, it wouldn't be anything compared to how angry Clay and Tonette would be when they found out. "Well, I'm not going to give you the chance," I said aloud. I needed to get out of this place where truth and lies swirled and bled together and stole all that I had left of me. I dropped to my knees and felt around until my hands landed on my backpack, which had been stuffed far behind the sofa, probably when Lexi and Meg were looking for something to steal. I pulled it out. It had been unzipped, but it didn't look like anything was gone. I quickly grabbed the blanket that lay folded up at the end of the couch, stuffed it inside, zipped it, and pounded through the screen door into the night. I wasn't sure where to go. I hadn't wandered around enough to have more than a vague idea of what was beyond the cookie-cutter houses and the strip malls. I could see pastures behind the house, and a thicket of trees on one side. I could maybe find an old barn to sleep in or a clearing under a tree. But what if a storm came? I hated that I now got panicky over something so silly, but I couldn't help it. Every day that the tornado sank deeper into my soul, I became more and more afraid of it. In the end, I decided to go with what was familiar and headed into town. Chapter 20. Morning took a long time to come. I hadn't slept at all, and I was exhausted from constantly looking over my shoulder, waiting for Clay or Harold or a cop to jump out at me. I'd spent the night wandering around the main strip of Castor City. At first, I'd hung around the back door of a boutique, sitting on smashed shipping boxes, playing cards until the stench from the dumpster behind the Chinese restaurant next door overpowered me. I'd moved to a tiny grove of evergreens behind a fast food place and stretched out on my back, studying Mom's face in the photo on my phone and softly singing Marin's bubble song until the mosquitoes drove me away. I spent some time texting Jane, who was up watching movies with her cousin. "How's life in Hickville?" she'd asked. "I'm running away," I'd responded.
"To where?"
"I don't know yet." I'd waited around, half hoping she would extend an invitation to run to her, but she never did. Instead, she replied,
"I'll keep you company."
While Jane and I texted, the passing cars got sparser and sparser, and soon there were none, and the stoplights began blinking yellow, and even the gas station closed for the night. I felt alone, stranded, and somehow that felt right. I moved around to the front of the strip mall and window shopped, as if this were something I often did at 3 o'clock in the morning. But it was a long time before the sun came up, and I'd found myself wedged into the back doorway of a furniture store, using my backpack for a pillow, my eyes heavy and grainy from lack of sleep, my butt numb from the concrete. I turned my hands over in my lap and studied them in the daylight. Somehow the blood had been rubbed away from the skin, but there was still a ruddy brown color under my fingernails. I wanted to wash them, wash Meg off me forever, and ended up tucking my fingers under my thighs so I wouldn't have to look at them. In time, I heard the sounds of the world waking up. Truck brakes hissing and car doors slamming and the occasional horn or voice. I packed up my things and started walking again, pulling my cell phone out of my pocket. I dialed Colby's number first. I could confide in him. I could tell him how terrible it was down here. I could tell him I was running away and he would help me.
"Hello?" a hushed voice asked. I paused.
This was the second time Colby wasn't answering his own phone. Hi, is Colby there?
Who is this?
This is Jersey. I was hoping he could give me a ride somewhere. There was a sigh on the other end of the phone.
Oh, Jersey, this is his mom. How are you?
I heard you're living down south with your dad now.
I was, but I'm not anymore. That's kind of why I need a ride up to Elizabeth. Can Colby come get me?
Honey, Colby's in the hospital.
Still?
For the cut on his arm?
A pause. Then, well, yes and no. The cut got infected. He's going to be here a while. I'm afraid he won't be up to driving for a bit.
I stopped walking, trying to make sense of it all. I'd never had a cut get infected, but figured it was just a matter of getting some antibiotics and going home. Why was this taking so long?
Oh, okay, I said.
Just tell him I called.
I will, honey. It will mean a lot to him to hear from you.
I'll come see him when I get back to Elizabeth.
Honey, maybe you should stay down there. Stay with your dad. I hate to see you get in a bad situation.
My dad's house was a bad situation, I said sourly.
I've got to go. I'll see Colby later, okay?
I hung up before she could say any more. I understood why she would think it was best for me not to run away, but she had no idea what I was running away from. I resumed walking, scrolling through my address book, and selecting Danny's name.
Hey, she answered, sounding groggy like she'd been asleep. How's it going?
Terrible. I ran away.
Can you ask your mom to come get me?
I already knew the answer, but it was worth a shot to try again. Maybe when her mom saw how desperate I was, she would change her mind. She was the only hope I had at this point.
Whoa! Wait, slow down. You ran away?
I proceeded to dump everything on Danny. What Clay had said about my mom, keeping him away from me, and how he'd given up on me long ago. I told her about finding Meg and Lexi with Marin's purse, and about the fight that had ensued all the way up to me gouging Meg's face last night. I need someone to come get me, I said. I need to get home. Please ask your mom.
I already did. She said no.
Tell her I'll get Ronnie to take me back. She can drop me off at the motel. Just
anything. Come on, Danny, please. I need to get out of here.
But you're like 3 hours away.
I'll wait.
Yeah, but my mom isn't going to want to drive 6 hours today, especially since she's already said she didn't want to get involved. She's going to say you need to give it more time.
She's going to say this is between you and Ronnie.
Maybe you should go to the police or something.
Oh, right, the police, since I'm a runaway and all.
I leaned against the scratchy wall. Suddenly the Chinese restaurant smelled really delicious. My stomach growled and I was thirsty.
Please, just ask.
Please, Danny? Danny sighed, then said,
Hang on.
I could hear her cover the mouthpiece of her phone and then some hushed mumbling as she talked to her mom. Their conversation seemed to go on forever, and I prayed she was going to come back with good news.
My mom wants to know where you're going to be waiting, she said at last.
Her voice sounded funny, monotone and flat. I tipped my head back into the sun and smiled.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
There's a bench outside the bookstore in the strip mall on Water Street. I'll be waiting for you there.
I love you, Danny, you know that?
I love you too, Jers, she said. And again her voice sounded dull.
See you soon.
I had to keep myself from running to the bookstore. I didn't want to get too tired or thirsty, and I definitely didn't want to wait outside in the open for too long, just in case Clay and Tonette were looking for me. It would be hours before Danny and her mom got here, long enough for me to figure out what I was going to do once I got back to Elizabeth. I recognized that if Danny's mom didn't want me there, and Ronnie didn't want me with him, I was going to be just as homeless up there as I was down here, but at least I'd be homeless in a familiar place. I had far more options in Elizabeth. I was pretty thirsty by the time I got to the bookstore, so I made a beeline for the water fountain. When Danny's mom arrived, I hoped she'd get me something cold to drink, maybe stop by a gas station for a slushie, and something to eat, and maybe I'd ask her to let me use her washer and dryer, take a shower, maybe take a nap on a real bed. But as I straightened up, swallowing the cold water, I heard a deep voice behind me.
Jersey.
I froze. It was a voice I recognized. I turned around. Ronnie? What are you doing here?
Come on,
he said, turning and stalking off toward the door, not even bothering to wait to see if I was following him. We walked to the parking lot where his truck sat filthy and ragtag right up front. I wondered if I had walked past it going into the bookstore, my mind so far away I hadn't even noticed that the truck that had been parked in my driveway for 6 years was sitting right there in the parking lot. We climbed in and I pushed my backpack and purse onto the floorboard between my feet. What are you doing here? I repeated as he pointed his truck toward the highway. I watched the lane turn into 2 lanes and then 4. My spirits soaring higher with each growing lane, with every mile between me and that awful house.
Harold called me last night, he said. Told me you beat up one of their girls and I needed to come get you. Then your friend Danny's mom called, said you'd run away and would be at the bookstore in case I wanted to call the police to pick you up and send you back to the Cameron's house.
I was stunned into silence. All that low mumbling and the funny tone in Danny's voice. Her mom had told me yes, just so I would be sitting somewhere long enough to let the cops come get me.
I sent you down here to stay with Clay,
Ronnie grumbled, looking straight ahead, his dashboard rattling on the road.
But I know how headstrong you can be, and your mother would not want you being a runaway.
His mouth straightened into a tight line at the mention of my mom. Thank you, I practically whispered. Something about being with Ronnie didn't feel right, but it felt so much better than being with my father. I didn't mention the things I'd wanted to say to him all this time. Why didn't you ever call me back? Why didn't you let me come home for the funerals? Why did you make me leave in the first place? I wanted to ask him if he had himself under control now, if his grief was still consuming him. Have you brushed your teeth? I wanted to ask him. Have you changed your clothes? Is the motel room a rotting mess of empty food containers and filthy sheets? But instead, I asked, can I get a Coke? He pulled over at the next fast food restaurant we saw and bought me one, handing it across the seat, our fingers brushing. His fingernails were dirty. His hands were dry. Meg's blood was still under my nails, but I didn't care. Have you cleared out the house? I asked when we got back on the road.
Some,
he said, and I could tell he didn't want to talk about it, but I pressed. It was my house, too, and I had a right to know. Did you find any of our stuff?
Some,
he said again. Anything worth keeping? He shook his head, took a deep breath.
Total loss.
You didn't keep anything? Annoyance crept into his voice.
No, Jersey, it's trash.
I pondered that. Our whole lives. The lives of 4 people tossed in a landfill with all the other garbage. Why do we spend so much time collecting stuff anyway if that's what it comes down to in the end? So are you still living at the motel? I asked.
If you call it living, sure, he answered.
Is there power in Elizabeth yet?
Yes.
I sipped my soda, feeling the cold sink down into my fingers and toes, the sugar and carbonation rushing to my head. I kicked off my shoes and held my feet under the floor vent, letting the air conditioning dry my sweaty toes. I'd run out of things to ask him. He wasn't going to give me answers, not real ones anyway, so what was the point? We both slipped into silence. I leaned my head against the window and watched the lines being eaten up by the front of the truck, until my eyes were too heavy from watching, and I fell asleep. I awoke when my body sensed that we had stopped moving. I sat up straight, stretching my stiff neck, and looked around. We were in a parking lot, but not one I recognized. I peered out the window. We weren't in Elizabeth, I could see that much. Ronnie had put the truck into park and was staring straight ahead through the windshield, his hands resting on the bottom loop of the steering wheel. Where are we? I asked on a yawn. I grabbed my soda and took another sip. It had gotten warm and watery, but it still tasted like heaven. A sign on the side of a nearby building said Waverly Public Library.
Waverly,
he said as I made the connection. His voice was rough and scratchy.
He was born in Waverly,
Grandfather Harold had said of Clay.
About an hour that way.
Waverly? Why? Waverly was about an hour southeast of Elizabeth. We'd driven through it once or twice on road trips, and Mom had always pointed out that she'd grown up there. Godforsaken hellhole, she'd always say. Hold your breath, you don't want to breathe in judgment. Oppression is contagious. And even though we had no idea what she was talking about, we'd always make a game of it, see who could hold their breath the longest, see if we could make it all the way through the town without taking a breath. Ronnie picked at the steering wheel with his dirty thumbnails.
At the funeral, he said.
And then he paused so long I wasn't sure he'd ever finish. He reached up and wiped his jaw with his hand a few times, then went back to picking.
Some people showed up, Jersey.
I wanted to be there. I should have been.
I was trying to keep you from being hurt.
My mother died. It's too late to keep me from being hurt. I should have been there.
Your mom's parents came,
he said, leveling his eyes at me at last. I sat back, stunned. I had never met my mom's parents. Mom hadn't seen or talked to her parents since before I was born. They'd told her that if she wanted to run off with that drunk troublemaker Clay Cameron, she no longer had a family to come home to, and Mom had taken them at their word. She had been glad to do so. She always talked about how they judged her, how she was never good enough for them, how they never understood her and forced her to be a perfect little princess when all she wanted was to be normal. When they disowned her, she was glad to be done with them. To hear her tell it, she had no idea where they lived, much less if they were alive or dead. I think in our hearts we all assumed they were dead. But they were alive, and she was the dead one. Ronnie went back to picking, I think because it kept him from having to look at me.
They didn't even know about Marin, he said. They knew about you because your mom was pregnant when she ran away, but they didn't even know Marin existed.
She didn't run away. They disowned her, I said, not caring a bit. That's their own fault.
They live here in Waverly,
he said, as if I hadn't spoken at all, and my inside started to turn cold as all the pieces fell into place. Mom growing up here, telling us to hold our breath so we didn't catch the oppression and judgment alive and well in Waverly. Ronnie was driving me to the very town where my grandparents lived.
They've always been right here. They still live in the same house your mom grew up in.
But they didn't bother to come by until now? I wanted to keep him talking, to turn the conversation around. Maybe I could stop what I knew was coming. Maybe if I made him understand how much Mom hated them, he wouldn't do what he was about to do. Again. They didn't care enough to try to see us until after she was dead? Ronnie shrugged.
They said they tried, when you were a baby, but according to them, your mom called the police to have them escorted off her property. She told them she never wanted to see them or speak to them again. Of course, this was when she was still with Clay. They gave up.
You don't do that, I said. And I realized that I wasn't sure if I was talking about my grandparents or about Mom or about Ronnie himself. You don't give up on your family. You don't just leave when your child needs you. My breath hitched every few words as tears and dread fell over me.
I'm sorry, Jersey,
Ronnie said, letting his hands rest limply in his lap.
I called them this morning. They're willing to take you in.
No, I said. My nose dripped and soaked into my jeans. I clutched at his elbow. Please, Ronnie, I want to go home. I'll be good, I promise. I won't cause any problems, ever. I don't know them. And Mom hated them. This isn't fair. Why do you hate me so much? Why do you think it's so bad to have me around? He shook his head and put the truck into drive. My hand slipped off his arm and landed in my lap in defeat.
I don't hate you, he said. But I can't take care of you. Every time I look at you, I see her. Every time I hear you talk, I think about how I let everyone down. I think about how I couldn't save any of you, not one.
He glanced at me as he turned down a side road, the street sign reading Flora. The houses were tidy, landscaped, painted. Not big, but bigger than our old house.
What good am I to anyone if I can't be there when it most matters?
But I'm still alive. You can still save me. It matters now. He pulled into a driveway. My tears slowed as I took in the white and brown Tudor-style house, flowers blooming in orderly raised beds surrounding the swept sidewalk. More flowers blooming in quaint window boxes, a saintly-looking statue on the front porch. The door opened slowly. I wiped my face with my palms.
I know you don't understand, Ronnie said, but you've got to make this work, Jersey. I'm selling the property anyway, going back east. I've already got the transfer okayed at work. You can't come home. There's not going to be one.
I tore my eyes away from the pale hand that still clutched the door. The hand must have belonged to one of my grandparents, but the shadows kept me from seeing who. You're not going to stay where they're buried?
Every time I look at that neighborhood, at the house, at every business and building I pass, I'm reminded of how I failed them. I can't live a life that way. I've got to go.
So you're abandoning all of us, I said. Not a question, but a statement.
I'm saving myself,
he said very quietly. It dawned on me that on some level I had expected Ronnie to change his mind, to get a little distance, heal, see his mistake, want me back. In some ways, I was more aghast at the realization that he would never change his mind than I was at seeing Mom's lipstick smeared across Meg's and Lexi's faces. I was more insulted by this than I'd been by Clay and Tonette insulting me and saying I didn't belong. I was more shocked by Ronnie's selfishness than I had been by the tornado itself. This wasn't how it was supposed to be. Life wasn't supposed to work this way. He wasn't supposed to choose himself over us.
You're a coward.
But before I could say any more, a gray-haired man wearing a plaid shirt and a baseball cap knocked on Ronnie's window. My mouth snapped shut. The man had a large, bulbous nose and huge eyebrows. But he also had wet, pouty lips that sort of reminded me of Marin's. And out from his cap, several curly strands of hair snaked around his ears. Ronnie rolled down the window.
Thank you for this,
he said to the old man. And the anger returned. I wanted to punch Ronnie for casting me out, for abandoning Mom and Marin, for being so dry-eyed and cavalier about the whole thing. The old man nodded.
Not a problem. She got any bags?
Not really. Just a couple up here she can carry. We lost everything, as you saw.
My jaw tensed. Ronnie had taken them to my house? To Mom's house? How could he? Mom would have been furious. She'd kept them away on purpose.
You get any word from FEMA yet?
The old man asked, and as Ronnie answered, I tuned him out, turning my gaze to the woman standing in the front doorway, wringing her hands, a melon-colored sweater hanging over a lighter melon-colored tunic. Even from the truck, I could see that she shared my knock knees, my rounded shoulders, my thick waist. All this time, I'd been wondering who exactly I looked like when the person I resembled most was right here in Waverly.
Ready?
The old man said. And I realized he had been peering past Ronnie over to where I sat.
Huh?
You ready?
Ronnie said. I glared at him. No, but I guess I don't have a choice, I said.
No, he said. You don't. You've got to make it work this time.
He went back to his picking on the steering wheel, and the old man slowly maneuvered his way around to my side of the truck. I clutched the top handle of my backpack and pushed Marin's purse tightly up my shoulder. My grandfather opened my door and I slid out. Have a nice life, I said to my stepdad. I knew I would never see him again. Chapter 21. My grandmother said my name in pretty much every sentence.
Jersey, she kept repeating. Jersey, would you like some coffee cake? Jersey, let's put your things away. What time do you like to wake up in the morning, Jersey?
It was like she couldn't get enough of it. It was driving me crazy already. I followed behind her in my burr-covered socks, my shoes left by the front door next to theirs. She showed me to my room, a lavender and white monstrosity of ruffles and gingham and scented soaps and fabric flowers. So different from the porch at my other grandparents' house, it made my brain ache. A plate of cookies sat on the nightstand. I could smell them from the doorway. My stomach rumbled.
"This used to be Christine's room," she said, stepping aside to let me pass.
I shuffled in, trying to imagine my mom in such a space, trying to see her stretched out across the cloud of bedding, her feet kicked up in the air behind her as she talked on the phone. Trying to imagine her pushing out the window screen and shimmying through to meet Clay, kissing him on his boozy mouth. It was getting harder and harder to call up mental images of Mom, especially any version of Mom that might have lived here. This was so different from the Mom I'd known. There was a framed photo on the dresser, a little girl on a man's shoulders, his hair a mess, the little girl holding a baseball cap proudly in the air.
"That's Christine and Barry," the woman said.
And when I continued to stare at her blankly, she added,
"Barry's your grandpa. I'm Patty. Did you know that already? I don't know what Christine shared with you."
I said nothing. She didn't want to know what Mom had shared with us about them, and even if she did, I wasn't in the mood to tell her. The 8-year-old inside me was afraid to breathe in this house, afraid of catching the oppression Mom had always talked about, afraid of being judged. How did I know who this woman really was? How did I know she wouldn't turn on me the way Danny's mom had, or give up on me the way Clay had, or lie to me the way Mom had, or cast me out the way Ronnie had? If I'd learned anything from the tornado, it was that I couldn't trust anyone but myself. My new grandmother might want to pretend that we were all one big happy family, but I knew the truth. One framed photo of a little girl mugging on her dad's shoulders a decade before being kicked out of the family does not make up for a lifetime of being cast out. In that regard, Mom was the same as me, I realized. We were both motherless. The realization flooded my heart, made me feel closer to her somehow. My grandmother interrupted my thoughts.
"You can call me Grandma, though," she said. "I'm so happy to finally meet you, Jersey. We both are."
I stared at her, unmoving, until she finally withered back from the doorway.
"I'll let you get settled. The bathroom's right across the hall here. Feel free to take a nap or explore or do whatever it is you want to do. We'll have dinner at 6, but if you get hungry before, you can have those cookies there."
She pointed at the plate. I refused to look at it.
"Or we can get you something else. Just holler, Jersey."
She shuffled out and closed the door. The moment she left, I devoured the cookies greedily, guiltily. Once they were gone, I stood by the night table, not sure what I was feeling anymore. The room was nice, it smelled good, and it was bright and cozy. My mom had a history here, so in a way, it felt comforting. But she'd hated that history. I was torn. If I decided to be happy here, wouldn't I be betraying Mom's memory? I finally shrugged my backpack down onto the floor and dug through it for some clean clothes. I pulled out a shirt and shorts from Terry. The shirt had a CCHS captain's logo on it, and for some reason, my old Elizabeth barking bulldog sweatshirt popped into my mind. I wasn't ever the biggest on team spirit. My friends and I were hardly athletes. In fact, we theater geeks never understood why anyone would want to run around in a field or in circles on a track, and the athletes never understood why we performing arts center groupies wanted to sweat under the spotlight, reciting Shakespeare sonnets in language that didn't make sense. It was a mutual understanding that neither of us had any desire to rectify. But everyone owned spirit wear. We wore it on football Fridays mostly, even if we never exactly bothered to go to the game. Marin was obsessed with my Elizabeth barking bulldog sweatshirt. She loved its cartoon bulldog and bright orange lettering. She'd drag it off my bed or out of the clean laundry basket, and would dance around the living room in it, on her tiptoes, total Marin style, the sweatshirt hanging to her ankles, the sleeves flapping in the air.
I told her once that when I graduated, she could have my sweatshirt.
You'd have thought I'd bequeathed her a diamond mine, the way she whooped and hollered and jumped around the room.
I didn't have the heart to tell her that by the time she got into high school, the sweatshirt would be way out of style and ugly and old, and she wouldn't want it. Sitting on my mother's old bedroom floor, with Ronnie gone and me having no choice but to breathe in Waverly, I was glad I hadn't told her those things. I was glad she was still looking forward to things on the day she died. I sank to the floor and picked up Marin's purse. Most of the lipstick had wiped off, but it was still rubbed into the cracks, the stitching. I grabbed a tissue from a box that sat on the dresser and scrubbed at the face of the purse. The lipstick was mostly gone, but if I looked hard enough, I could still see traces of pink. I pulled the lipstick out of the purse, then rubbed across the top of it with the tissue, too. The stick was no longer sharp the way Marin liked it, but at least it didn't have Meg's and Lexi's germs on it anymore. I dropped it back inside the purse and found a piece of gum. I drew a sweatshirt on the foil. Marin is a barking bulldog. I hid it with the others, noticing that the collection was getting pretty big now, which meant that the gum supply was getting low. I didn't want to chew the last pieces. To run out of Marin's gum would seem like an end that I hadn't fully realized yet, and didn't want to. I smoothed the foils from Meg's and Lexi's gum. Marin loves Minnie Mouse the most because she has a bow. Marin has tiny toenails. I changed into clean clothes and lay back on the bed, staring at the ceiling, thinking about all the things I could write on foils for Marin, all the ways I wanted to remember her. I could probably start writing and never stop. But eventually there was a light tapping on my door, and I sat up guiltily as if I'd been doing something wrong. My grandmother poked her head in.
"Would you like a snack?" she asked.
"I thought dinner was at 6," I almost answered sarcastically, but then I remembered that I wasn't speaking to these people, at least not yet. So I just stared at her. I held my breath.
"I've got some strawberries," she said hopefully.
I let the air out through my nose, then took another silent breath in and held it again.
"Would you like a soda, Jersey?" she tried.
Nothing. I let my mom's hatred fill my eyes. My grandmother chewed her lip.
"We want to help you, Jersey," she said. "We know this is hard for you."
I turned my gaze away from her then, pointed it straight at the photo of my mom. Did they? Did they really know how hard this was for me, to lose everything, to be bounced around to see who wanted me the least, to know that I would never have my life back again, and that I was totally alone? It was like the tornado had ripped through my house and torn me away. It was impossible that they could understand the rage inside me, the confusion and guilt and surrender, the hard edges that had begun to rub open, raw sores onto my heart. Because even I didn't understand it, and I was the one living it. And besides, if they really understood what it felt like to be inside my head, my heart, right now, they would run in fear. They would leave me alone. She stayed propped up by the door for what seemed far too long, then finally sighed.
"Well, here. Will this help anyway?"
Curiosity kicked in, and despite myself, I turned to see what this was. She reached around the doorframe and held out a phone.
"I thought you might want to call your friends. I'm sure you're wondering what's happening back at home."
She waggled the phone in the